Well, this weekend here in Champaign-Urbana, there will be a concert that will feature a guest here that we have with us on the telephone who certainly is known to folks in Champaign-Urbana, should be, as she is known to people probably now around the world, as a leading exponent of Scottish traditional music. Jean Redpath is her name. She's given concerts here in our area before. She's performed at the Cranert Center. And in fact, since the early 60s, when she first came to the United States, she has toured all over the country and I believe has performed in every state of the Union. So if you haven't seen Jean, you'll have an opportunity coming up this weekend. She's going to be giving a performance with the Chorale, which is a choral group that's been around now for more than 20 years here, involving people in Champaign-Urbana and the area, giving various kinds of performances. And one of the things that they've been doing now for some time is trying to encourage young people, high school age people, who are interested in seriously pursuing a career in the arts. And so this weekend, they'll be doing their scholarship concert that will involve some young local performers in the area. And also, Jean Redpath will be performing with the Chorale. Here in the studio with me is Julie Beiler. She is the founding director of the Chorale. And joining us on the telephone is Jean Redpath. And we'll talk a little bit about Jean and her career and music. And also we'll talk about the event that's coming up this weekend. And of course, anyone who is listening is welcome to call in if you have a question. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana listeners. We do also have a toll-free line, though. And if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. That's 800-222-9455. And then the local number for folks here in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. Well, Jean Redpath, hello.
Hello. How are you, David?
I'm fine, thanks. And I'm really pleased to be talking with you again. I was sitting here talking with Julie Beiler and trying to figure out when the last time that I spoke with you was. And I think that we decided that it must have been in the early 80s. I can't believe that it was that long ago when you were here to give a performance in Champaign-Urbana. And we sat down in the studio and chatted. It didn't seem quite like that long, but I guess it has actually been that long.
I can't remember, David. Incidentally, I love your accent.
That's very kind. That's very kind of you.
People, I thought I would get that in first for a change.
People, you know, don't often really take note of it, but I've cultivated that Midwestern twang now for 51 years, and I think I've just about got it down.
Just about got it down, right?
Just about got it down. I also should say good morning and welcome to Julie Beiler.
Hey, good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Jean. It's nice to meet you this way for the first time.
You, as Jean probably knows, Jean was born and grew up in Scotland. And when you went to university, I understand that initially you were interested in something called medieval studies, but later on discovered the School of Scottish Studies. And that was what perhaps got you more and more interested in traditional Scottish song. Did you initially have the idea that perhaps you would be an academic and go on to be a university professor? And
you know, I don't think I had any ideas at all. It's just what you did at that point. You know, your the wheels are set in motion down certain tracks, and until you stop and reassess and think about it, I don't believe there was any conscious thought about what I was going to do with this degree. I was fortunate enough to have the chance to go to university, and I went there for 4 years, I guess, and originally was doing, it sounds sort of funny coming from me, but English language, because I was interested in etymology and semantics, and of course English language turned out to be many years of Old English verbs and Norse verbs and German, and none of which really appealed, so I switched to the medieval studies. The School of Scottish Studies was what I spent my time doing. My classes were taken in something entirely different, so really the two didn't fall into any academic basket at all. School of Scottish Studies, as far as I was concerned, largely took place between midnight and 2 a.m. when we were sitting around swapping songs someplace. I did no formal studies there.
When did you first start to sing publicly? That I guess by that I mean for an audience, in front of an audience.
I was 11.
Ah.
But so, terrified. I insisted everybody put the lights out and face the other direction. I mean, who could stand it? I mean, who could put up with a brat like that? Awful, awful stage fright for years. Years and years. And something just gave in the middle of a song. When I was about 16, I wondered where the noise had come from. and it was me. And the tension just went. I have no idea to this day why or how, but I'm grateful. And I haven't stopped making a noise since.
Mm-hmm. How is it that you made a decision to come in the early 1960s to come to the United States?
Oh, like most major moves, I think it was almost arbitrary. I had a good friend from California, from San Francisco, who spent her junior and postgrad years in Edinburgh, and since it was too far to go home, she spent the holidays, the vacations with my family. So when she left the second time, she said, you know, if you ever get to California, you know you have a home. My parents have a farm. And about a year later, she wrote and said, I'm getting married. Could I persuade you to sing at my wedding? And at that point, I was already, you know, hanging onto the branch and flapping wildly, wondering if I could actually fly if I left go. So I wrote back and said, I'll come sing at your wedding if you and your husband sponsor my immigration. So it was as arbitrary as that. I knew it was time to go somewhere, do something, you know, just leave the nest and get out there. But I don't think there was, again, an enormous amount of thought and life plan behind the whole move. But as with most things, I think I was led firmly by the hand. This was what I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. 10 years later, I realized, of course, it was no longer temporary.
I wanted to bring Julie here into the conversation because I want to give her the opportunity to talk a little bit about how it is that the concert that you all are going to do came about. How did you get the idea of inviting Gene Redpath to come and sing with your group?
Well, David, I think in a way I have to give some credit to my friend Alice Parker. She was here with us last year at this time, Alice Parker of Robert Shaw fame. Mm-hmm. And she once again renewed my consciousness of how very important melody is. You know, I've directed this group for some 22 years, and I think sometimes as choral directors we get consumed with the complexity of choral singing and worrying about harmonies and that sort of thing. And Alice was really very, and is always, focused on the melody. And so the minute I walked off stage, as is often the case, we're thinking, what next? What next? What can we do? And some beautiful melodies came to my mind, and immediately I thought of Celtic music. And Gene doesn't know this, but I actually was in the Urbana Methodist Church in, I think, 82, Gene, when you were here. Just peeked my head around the corner during a sound check, I believe, and heard this completely simple, beautiful, pure sound. And so moments after Celtic and other folk came to my mind, Gene's name came to my mind. And so it was really one of those serendipitous kinds of things. I wanted to share with you just a few words that Stereo Review said about Gene, and I think it talks about this melody and sound. If it's beautiful sounds that you like, you have to like the voice of Gene Redpath. Talk about art concealing art, and you're talking about the way Gene sings. It's the melody we have here, and a voice and a half, both lovely. So that's how we come to be.
Mm. Boy, you're doing wonders for my morale this morning, I'll tell you.
Well, it's right here.
Well, also, it strikes me, Gene, that what you do is, it's a pretty brave kind of performing, because often you sing unaccompanied, and then also a lot of, at least just about everything that I think I've heard that you've recorded, the arrangements are very simple, a small number of accompanying musicians, so that your voice is always right there. And certainly if you're standing there on a stage all by yourself and singing without accompaniment, that's about as much out there as you can possibly get. And I guess I can sympathize with the idea of being being anxiety producing to be doing that all by yourself.
Well, only in early days when one had stage fright and very little experience. The longer I've been at it, David, the more that position has reversed itself. Anxiety for me now is to have a scheduled program and have to try and remember what I'm supposed to be doing at any given time, in what key, with what entrances and if anybody else is involved. That's nerve-wracking. The other one at this point is second nature, because basically I can do what I like when I like, and it also means that I can work more or less intuitively. You know, people say, what do you mean you don't have a program? Well, the program really should be dictated by the surrounds. That way, A, the repetition factor is removed and I never get bored with what I'm doing, and B, it ought to be tailored to the people, the animals sitting in front of me on any given night. Just, you know, take same several hundred people and three nights running, and you've got three totally different audiences. The chemistry is quite different, and the presentation should match that. It shouldn't just be rote.
How do you read the audience to make those decisions about what songs that you'll sing?
Well, I think, although I've never consciously evolved it, I think the first 10 or 15 minutes, it's always a bit of a challenge to do short sets, because I'm now sort of programmed to do a two-hour concert. And the first 10 or 15 minutes, I'm sort of testing. It's a little like the Pillsbury Doughboy, you know, it's prodding to see where I get a giggle and where I get no response and where there is resistance. And there's always a little of everything. And then take it from there. And, of course, the challenge is to find the areas of resistance and to prod away at those until they softened up a bit. Mm. If people have a built-in resistance to the unaccompanied voice, for instance, then you sort of have to woo them a little bit with guitar and with laughter, presumably. And, again, over the years, I find that the really heavyweight material is fairly indigestible. I don't want a hall full of people to leave as manic depressives. And you could do a program of classic ballads and have them go out wondering if life is really worth it. But they are also very powerful songs, so the gift wrap there, of course, is nonsense, if you will, is my particular jaundiced view of the Scot as an animal and how we come to be as we are and people's reaction to my accent, this kind of thing. Anything that will make people smile and then before they recover is to present something just a little meatier and then move off it again. The whole process of timing a program is endlessly intriguing, which is one of the reasons I've been able to do this for so long without burning out entirely. Because there's the big danger of working by yourself. You can't take a night off and say, I'm a little off tonight. You do the major part of the work. You know, the audiences take a dim view of that.
Yeah. We have a couple of CDs of the more than, there are more than 40, I think, that you have, that you recorded?
Well, I think there are 43 separate titles at this point, but not all of those are in CD form yet, David. I'm working on it.
Oh, all right. So there is a wealth of recorded music. If you'd like to hear some of Gene's singing, we have a couple. In fact, our good buddy Rich Warren, the host of the Midnight Special, lent us a couple from his own collection, and we ran the titles by Gene, and she suggested a couple. Would you like to call for one and to play for folks, just to hear, to give them something to listen to if they're not familiar with your singing?
Well, you could either start with the Davy and Jeannie, which is really, I think, as far as I'm concerned, the archetypal, unaccompanied, understated Scottish traditional song. It's very short. There's no way you could put an accompaniment to it that would do anything but detract from the song, and you couldn't put the story in any fewer words. Can't remember what it's on, though. I think it's on Now
it's
and Then.
It's on Now and Then, yes, uh-huh. And I think Henry says he's got it queued up and ready to go, so
wonderful.
let's listen to that.
Fet was on your mind, Bonnie Jeannie. Fet was on your mind when you changed your bed to mine. Were you tired of lying your lane, Bonnie Jeannie? It was all for love of you, Bonnie Davy. It was all for love of you, but but a seam of folly new. For you've gin me cause to rue, bonny Davy.
That's Jean Redpath. And actually, Jean, I think when you were here and we did that interview, Nen, whatever 80 that was, you were sitting across from me in the studio. You sang that.
Very likely. It's been a long, long time favorite of mine. I think it really illustrates, you know, so much that's absolutely the best of the Scots tradition. This we go either in one direction or the other. You can only ever get an illustration of the excess from me, but we either say a tremendous amount of in very few words and leave everything to the imagination, or we talk nonstop. I tend to favor the latter. Well, the classic ballad, of course, will relax and take anywhere from 18 to 30 to 40 verses to tell the story. And something like this, just like it's almost like a Japanese brush painting, isn't it? The whole thing is suggested by outlines, and the rest is left to you and not your imagination so much as your own experience to fill in the colors and the details, which is why it's so powerful.
Well, it shows off your voice beautifully, I have to say. This particular CD, I was listening at my house last night, and I really enjoyed it thoroughly. And, you know, actually, I'm not sure why one particular song, The Augie Man, really grabbed me. And I don't really know why, but it's another song that was that's very... has a big emotional punch.
Oh, indeed.
It's just
little,
and it's just
tawny
you.
Too.
Yeah.
I think again, it's almost exactly the same power as Davy and Jeannie. It's the simplicity. There really is such emphasis put on simplicity. There's no lengthy story. There's no extended kvetch. It's just, you know, she's gone. You know, she's gone, and we all know what loss of, you know, any kind of love life or liberty, but the loss of love particularly, we know what that feels like in some form or other. And the less you say about it, then the more applicable it is to the listener, which would all argue for keeping songs down to four lines of text.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580, joining us by telephone, is Scottish folk singer Jean Redpath. And here in the studio with me, Julie Byler. She's the founding director of The Chorale, a choral group that's been now more than 20 years performing in our area here in Champaign-Urbana with members from the area here. They have a concert coming up this weekend on Sunday, and Jean will be performing with The Chorale. And that this is a concert, now you've been doing this, I guess, for a while, as an effort to encourage and to show off young talent, right?
Well, that's true. Actually, it... again, was kind of a serendipitous event. We do an evening New Year's Eve show at the Virginia Theater, which we've been doing for some 13 or 14 or I can't remember how many years. And the first year we did it, we actually made money. As you know, David, we're a not-for-profit, completely out there, speaking of flapping on the wings, and that's what we're doing. And so when we made money, we said, well, we need to be able to give some of this away. And for the last 12 years, we've been doing that. We give a $1,000 scholarship or more in a good year away to a high school senior who's going to continue studying music. And hopefully, when they come out into what I call the real world after their academic experience, they will bring opportunities like those that we're doing to a community so that people can actually sing or play in a group and not have a lot of stress or pressure associated with it. So our winner this year, I could take this opportunity to let you know,
sure,
is Davion Williams. He's a baritone, and he's from Urbana High School. He has what I think is just the beginnings of just a wonderful, wonderful voice. And then returning to perform, we kind of lure these kids back while they're in undergraduate school. And so coming from USC will be Grace Hsu, who's a pianist, and also Jim Siders here at the university, his fourth year with us as a bass trombonist. We have a lot of fun with that. And then we have Andreas Stoltzfus playing trumpet. And also this year we'll be enjoying the music from Adelaide Muir, who you know has distinguished herself this year as one of seven finalists at the Metropolitan National Opera Council auditions in New York. So it's a very full plate. When I originally contacted Jean and I wanted to have Jean come for our New Year's Eve concert, she was a little leery about our unpredictable Illinois weather. So from her Florida comfort there. So we're she's coming to us in May. And like I said, this will be a very full plate. Come prepared to enjoy a lot of variety. The chorale is going to sing a little Irish here and there, a little Welsh, and some Scottish folk songs, and some American folk songs. And then we have given Jean the challenge, as she mentioned to you earlier, of two sections. She's actually not performing with us. And you'll be happy to know, Jean, that it says on the program when it's come time for you. It just says Jean Redpath sings. So there's no order, no pressure there.
But what a wonderful program.
I wish
to goodness the Scots were enlightened enough to do the same thing for their own tradition.
Well, it's like I said, it was just something that happened when we knew we had, I mean, can you ever have more money than you need? No. But we wanted to precipitate this idea that music is not just for, particularly in this university community, you know, we have a lot of competition for people's time and attention, and it's important that just ordinary community folks be able to do this sort of thing. So we feel so fortunate to be able to bring not only to the audiences but to these young folks, women of stature like this, musicians of stature like this in their field, as I mentioned, Alice Parker last year and Jean. We're so looking forward to it.
Well, very good. And the program we're talking about, this will take place on Sunday, May 2nd, 7 in the evening at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. And it's free.
It's a free concert. I must say that we do ask people to consider giving donations to our scholarship fund, but that doesn't keep you from getting a seat. You come in, and I would suggest, since there are no reserved seats, it is general seating, that you think about coming just a few minutes earlier than you might, because we're hoping that the doors and the walls will be bulging.
All right, very good. Well, and also I want to tell people who are listening, if you'd like to call in, maybe you have a question or something you'd like to talk about with our guest, you can do that. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Julie, are the chorale members, are these people who just mostly sing for fun, or are some of them people who in their professional life, maybe they're, I know you teach voice, are the other people who have music as a career?
We have a few who are music teachers in the school systems around here, but most of them, David, are people like you who might consider coming to sing for fun. Don't laugh. I've had so many people tell me, oh, I can't sing. That's really not true, you know. There are very few people who cannot sing, if any. And so these are, as our age range is at this particular year is from 23 to, I think Betty wouldn't mind if I said 80 something. And they're in all walks of life. We rehearse only during the academic year. We, as I said, do not have auditions. I struggle with that every year on my more frustrating rehearsal evenings, thinking, well, do I want to make this a more exclusive group? And the answer always comes back, no, because this is what we're about, providing as many exciting and enriching ongoing opportunities for choral music singing for singers and for listeners.
Very good. We have a caller, someone over in Indiana, in Mill Creek Valley, Indiana, on our toll-free line, our line 4, right here. Hello.
Yeah, I've got two questions for Jean Redpath. First of all, what part of Scotland is she from originally?
Born in Edinburgh, but just because my mother was there at the time, I was raised in East Fife.
Hey, all right. What part of East Fife?
Well, I grew up in Leven.
How about that? Okay, I went to St. Andrews University.
Ah.
And my wife did, too. She was from Angus. Okay, the other question was, do you ever sing any bawdy ballads, like from the Mearns or Angus? I think a McGinty's Meal and Ale or a Sprouts of Bernie Brucey. Do you ever sing any songs like that?
Oh, yes. Yes, but not often on the stage, because as you can imagine, I can use a verse for illustration, but we're talking very much foreign language. And since I have pretty well sworn to myself that people should have some idea of what I'm on about, the explanation frequently will take a great deal longer than the performance of the song, and that's not really cost effective.
How about printing them in the bulletin?
Well, I'm absolutely dead against having any printed material in front of somebody who's supposed to be listening. I'm firmly convinced you can't use your eyes and your ears at the same time.
Okay.
But as far as a book is concerned, yes, it's in the work. It's been in the works for years. Yeah. I don't know how many bossy ballads are going to be in there because, again, if you think of what the glossary of the Sprouts of Burnie Boosie would look like, it would take up probably more room than the text. It's difficult. It comes down to the whole notion of comedy versus tragedy. You don't ever have to translate tragedy. But the minute you get into comedy, you have to explain why something is funny and why that word in that context raises a giggle in Scotland, though it may not elsewhere. So I guess a long answer to your question is the preceding, and the short answer is not very often because of the language problems.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Right. Okay, thanks
you
for calling.
The call. Other questions, comments, what have you, are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I remember having this experience now a number of years ago, visiting someone who is a couple, a man who was American and his wife was Scottish, and we're at their house for dinner. And after dinner, they put on a comedy album by someone, and I guess I don't remember now who it was, but it was a very, very popular Scottish entertainer, and it was a live performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I could barely get a word. The audience was having a great time.
Yes.
They obviously knew it was recorded somewhere in Scotland, and he was singing and telling jokes, and I had no idea. All I can tell you was that whoever was there at his performance, they were having a great time.
Well, it's something that has intrigued me for years. The difference in senses of humor, and it has everything to do with culture, obviously, but it also has a great deal to do with age, and also with the much subtler things like the physical plant that you're in. In Scotland, for instance, churches are only very recently being used as a community space rather than someplace that is strictly for religious services on a Sunday. And this is still true in much of the far northwest. You don't really do anything in the church except go to church on Sunday, which seems to be an awful waste of a wonderful space, especially for singing. But the first time that I got up on my hind legs in my local church in Leven, the audience was desperately inhibited, and so was I. Hmm. And, you know, this is conditioning, and it's taken a long time to realize that the basic premises make a joyful sound to whom is a matter of choice, but the joyful sound doesn't change. And if that's true, then why would you worry about the fact that you're in a place of worship? You know, a different kind of worship.
Hmm. It does seem to be an awful lot of performers favor the kind of acoustics that you can get in a church.
Oh,
something
absolutely.
About that kind of space and the spaciousness of the sound. It sets a few voices, a small number of performers.
Oh, sets these great vaulted spaces are wonderful.
Yeah. I think that we should play something else, at least one other cut for people who are listening. I wonder again, Gina, is there something that you think might be you'd like to have people hear?
We'll try the Railway Porter, since that nice man from Indiana was concerned about bothy ballads and whatnot. This is, I would think, it's not a bothy ballad. It probably, if you were going to give it a pigeonhole at all, I would call it Scottish music hall. It's, you know, it's vaudevillian rather than anything else, but it does raise the subject of how much of the broad Scots comes across. It's intended to be tongue-in-cheek. It's intended to send up the accent quite a bit. But a great deal of the point is lost if it's sung too fast or with too thick an accent. I'm not sure. Is that on Now
and Then? It is indeed on Now and Then. It's the Railway Porter, and I think Henry's got it ready to go, and let's listen.
Oh, I'm a railway porter, and my name is Wally Wee.
I'm the most important fella that you'd ever like to see. I work at all the stations for Dumbarton to Dundee. It's my duty of to tell ye or to change here. You change for Achter Machter Cuddle, my dochter, grief and colour coats. Fife and Johnny Groats, Beecham's Peels and Quaker Oats. Change for Echel, Fech and Aberdeen and all the stations in between. Unless you want to gant it over more. Ye should see me hurl my bar, ye should see me swipe the flare. If there's no a tip forthcoming, you should hear me curse and swear. When a train comes in the station, then my head comes in the air. And you'll hear me loud and clear, you've got to change here. You change for Achter Machter Cuddle, my dochter, grief and colour coats. Fife and Johnny Groats, Beecham's Peels and Quaker Oats. Change for Echel, Fech and Aberdeen and all the stations in between. Unless you want to gant it over more. New a Monday morning early, I was full of pride. The royal train come running in, and what do you think I spied? His Majesty King George's cell, the Queen was by his side. So I yelled, we all my mecht, you've got to change here. You change for Achter Machter Cuddle, my dochter, grief and colour coats. Fife and Johnny Groats, Beecham's Peels and Quaker Oats. Change for Echel, Fech and Aberdeen and all the stations in between. Unless you want to gant it over more.
That's The Railway Porter, and the CD is Now and Then. It's not new. It's back from 99. It's got a lot of really nice music on that. Of course, there are many CDs available of Gene Radpath. If you'd like to sample more of her work, you can go down to the wherever you buy your CDs or library or wherever, you can check it out. Gina, are those all actual railway stops in the course of the song? Are those all real places?
Well, most of them are, but the third line is Achter Machter. Achter Machter is in Fife. Cuddle my dochter, of course, is hug my daughter. It's you know, it's nonsense. Colour Coats is, but Johnny Groats is the far north of the Scotland, but Quaker Oats, of course, is porridge, is oatmeal, porridge oats. So it's nonsense, but it's euphonic nonsense, and it's playing heavily on, you know, the Germanic palatal that the Scots are renowned for.
Well, and also it puts me in mind of mouth music.
Indeed, yes, indeed. Except there's an attempt here to say something sensible. A lot of mouth music, there's not at all. Or even if there is, it's better that you shouldn't understand it.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of the show. I just want to tell people who are listening, maybe if you'd like to call in and talk with Gene Radpath or Julie Byler, all you have to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. I think earlier I asked Gina when you had first publicly performed, and you said you were 11?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Have you had formal voice training?
No.
No, not at all?
None at all. I've had two abortive attempts. People kept saying to my parents when I was a youngster, you should do something with that lassie's voice, never being specified exactly what it was they should do with it. But obviously, there was something there which should be developed, but nobody wanted to be any more specific. And when I was about 16, I went to the local music store in Leven, which happened to be about six doors away from where we stayed. And the man who ran the music shop sold cheap music, fiddle strings, he taught piano, he taught fiddle. He probably sold harmonicas, and that was the only game in town. And he did, in fact, take me in the back room, had me sing two or three scales, and said, just a minute, went off to the front room and came back with the sheet music for, and I shall never forget, When the Heather Gleams Like Stardust on the Hills, which was not anything that interested me then and interests me a great deal less now. And when I went home, my mother said, how did you get on? I said, I'm not going back. So that was it. That was lesson number one. And to my lasting, everlasting shame, I never paid him for the sheet music. I probably will not be able to sleep easy for the rest of my life because of that. But it was 2 shillings and 3 pence, as I recall. And the lesson was 2 shillings and 3 pence wasted. The next one, I was at university, and I approached the wife of the university chapel organist, whom I knew to be a voice teacher, and said to Mrs. Smart, I think I'd like to train my voice. And the next 20 minutes were probably a focal point in my life, because her answer was one of the most intelligent things that's ever been asked of me. She smiled. She says, that's wonderful. What do you want to train it to do? And that stopped me dead in my tracks, of course, because like most of the world at that point, I thought in terms of there are singers and there are singers. And I thought I wanted to become a singer. And in 20 minutes, she managed to turn my head around, indicate to me that if I were doing nothing bad, nothing injurious to the vocal cords, I should carry on doing whatever I was doing. And if I could master the breathing, I could do anything I wanted. And having more or less pointed me in that direction, she said, considering your field of interest, I think you should go and sing for 20 years. So that was my second voice lesson. Mm. Amazing woman. I happily had the chance to thank her some years later.
Do you find many people like that who just seem to be kind of naturally doing the things that are right?
Actually, you know, singing is just really an extension of speaking.
Absolutely. You know, I knew I liked that woman. The minute I heard her, I knew I liked that woman.
And so when people say to me, I can't sing, it's very difficult for me to understand how that can be true. And I try very hard to say to them, if you can speak and you can hear, you can sing. I think we sometimes, of course, there are those who want to be trained, need to be trained, should be trained. And there are a lot of good things that can come from training. Breathing is a very big one. But the naturalness with which we would sing, if we could be uninhibited enough to allow ourselves to do that, is really most often a correct thing because we haven't been taught any bad habits. Now, those of us who sing for people, in front of people, sometimes resort to all kinds of physical little tricks that we do in order to be able to produce countable sound, I call it, you know, repeatable sound. And then we do develop some bad habits. But if it's just a casual singing, it's most often done correctly.
We have another caller to talk with. Why don't we do that? They're in Champaign, line one.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question for Jean Redpath, please.
Sure.
I listen to Thistle and Shamrock every Sunday, and this week they featured a center for the performing arts in the Highlands of Scotland, and one of the children's groups sang I assume it was a Scots Gaelic walking song.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there is a revival or a resurgence of Scots Gaelic music all over Scotland. That was my question.
Okay, not all over Scotland, because the language has receded north and west over the last 150 years. Certainly there is a much stronger interest, to the point where you do have centres like the Inverness one, you do have Solastig in Skye, you have a Gaelic college in Skye working with vocal and instrumental music, particularly of the Gaels. You have Gaelic programs on both radio and television, which of course is that's a stamp of approval from the establishment, is it not, that you can actually get it on mass media. Whether or not it will stop the rot entirely, it's hard to say, because the same mass media, of course, is responsible or are responsible for bringing in material that would never translate into Gaelic. But we do have Gaelic rock groups, all sorts of things that are taking their place in the current music scene. As far as the choral music is concerned, this has been an argument for so many years, I can't tell you. Where will a choral group trained to sing in harmony in a foreign language ever do much for a language which requires an individual to speak and sing it individually? If you see it, poorly articulated. But it's going to depend on each person being willing to use the language. And if you only ever hear it sung in a choral group, in a competition, how far will it take it? As far as I'm concerned, better you should hear it that way than never hear it at all. There's bound to be a spin-off someplace. But artificial respiration may or may not work where Gaelic is concerned. And, of course, the big argument from where I sit is the Scots language is in equal jeopardy, and precious little's been done about that. You just don't hear so much about it because it's not recognisably different to the same extent that Gaelic is. But I'm delighted that you get a chance to hear any of this. I mean, Fiona has done a cracking job over the years of making a great deal of music that is difficult to get a hold of in recorded form. If you're interested in walking songs, incidentally, the School of Scottish Studies did a collection, which is now available on CD, called Walking Songs from Barra, from the island of Barra. And this is all done by the field collecting, so there's a lot of the old-timers, and those are wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for answering my question.
Not at all. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for the call. I want to mention that anyone who is interested in Celtic music, if you don't know about this program we've been talking about, you should check it out, Thistle and Shamrock. It's been airing on public radio for quite a few years now. Fiona Ritchie is the host of the program, and she features music from Ireland and Scotland and other kinds of Celtic sources. And we air the program on our FM station, WYLL FM, Sundays, just a little bit past noon. So if you're interested in hearing some of that music, it does the whole range really more traditional kinds of approaches to the music and more modern pop and world music influenced Celtic groups and sort of everything in between. So if you'd like to sample some of that music. And also, I'm told, Julie tells me that one of our FM staff is going to talk with Jean
live
on Sunday just right before Thistle and Shamrock. Just so right tune in a little bit earlier at say about 10 minutes before noon, and you can hear Jean, and then of course you could hear Fiona and her show. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222. Those are the numbers if you want to call in here to talk with our guest, Jean Redpath, joining us here by telephone. And here in the studio with me is Julie Byler. She is the founding director of the Chorale. They're having a concert this weekend on Sunday. And Jean is going to be, I have said that she was going to be performing with the Chorale, and they're going to be on the same stage, but it's not exact. She's not singing with the chorale.
We'll
the chorale is
places,
singing.
Yeah.
Jean is also going to sing. And that's this Sunday, this coming Sunday, May 2nd, 7 in the evening, Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. It is free. They wouldn't mind a little contribution, but there is no charge at the door.
No one will attack you at the door or at all. And in fact, we want you to come and plan to spend a good evening. After the concert, there will be a reception. For those of you who would like to greet Jean and our young artists, and it's a cookies and punch kind of social get together afterward.
All right, no Whiskabach.
Afraid not. Methodist Church.
Oh well, maybe later.
It would have to be later. I think that's right.
All right, let's go to line number one for caller in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. We're thinking of going to Scotland sometime in the next year. And I'm wondering if there's a city or a geographical area or a particular venue where we could hear some good, authentic Scottish folk music.
Oh, God, that is such a sad question. I don't know how to answer it. I have never, ever understood the difference between two peoples who basically have the same origin. The Irish hang together. You get Irish pubs, you get Irish shops. all of the Irish, well, not all of the Irish, but a lot of the pubs in Ireland, you can go in and get music. It may be spontaneous. It may be there for the tourists. It doesn't matter. It's there. That just plain isn't true in Scots. They seem to avoid each other when they're overseas unless they're dancing, doing Scottish country dancing. And to the best of my knowledge, unless you can lock into the folk club circuit, and I'm not just entirely sure how you would do that these days because they tend to come and go, a folk club will meet in usually a hotel lounge, maybe every Tuesday, maybe every second Tuesday, whatever day of the week they choose, and you will find music there that is very largely a product of who the organizers are and what they encourage. It need not necessarily be just Scottish traditional music. You could find yourself listening to a lot of country songs, depending on who's running the club. But as far as being able to say, go to Sandy Bell's pub in Edinburgh and you will always get music of some kind, I don't know how true that is anymore. It's just a very hard one to answer. The folk clubs are around, and I would suggest possibly that you try the net. There is an outfit called Living Tradition, and I believe they have a website, www.livingtradition.com, I think. It certainly shouldn't be too difficult to find it on the net. And they're doing wonderful things about running summer schools and teaching classes and like that. And while I'm talking here, I'm having a look at a magazine to see if I can give you any more information. The chap that runs it is an Englishman, which is fairly telling right there. But he does an enormous amount of work as far as sending out information about who is where, what's going on. If you're going to be there in August, he's also running something in the west of the country for a week, which would be worth going to as well. They do a thing called Robert Burns Meets Martin Luther King, where they are pulling together material and performers with the same kind of global approach to life. You know, if we can sing together, maybe we can manage to live together. The website I'm not doing any better on, Lass, I'm sorry, but try Living Tradition on the net and you should be able to pull it up. And that would be the best place to ask for information and have them point you at whatever publication might be able to tell you exactly who is meeting where and when. There has to be some kind of a directory, a folk club directory, but I don't know who's running it these days.
Okay, thank you very much.
But enjoy, everybody should go at least twice.
Yeah, hold it.
Before you hang up, caller, just let me say, we visited both Ireland and Scotland in the last few years, and I think that was one of the most disappointing things to me was that I just couldn't walk in off the street, even in Ireland, Jean. What I heard usually was Elvis or, you know,
yes,
something like that.
Isn't that depressing?
Yeah, very. But what we did do was we hung out in the least likely tourist places and we asked a lot of questions.
Uh-huh.
And you can get some leads there, but you have to get your nap because I want to tell you, they don't start until late.
Oh, no. It's 9 o'clock at the earliest.
Oh, at the earliest, yeah.
And with any luck, they'll run well after what should be the close of licensing hours. The only thing I would warn you is that, unfortunately, one of the reasons I stopped singing in folk clubs in Scotland was not because I got snot-nosed about it, was because I couldn't stand the cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
By 10 o'clock at night when you stand up, there's no oxygen left. You want to go home and burn your clothes. It's improved a bit, but it's still very much a case of you go out in the evening, you go out for a pint and a fag. And if you're going to be sitting there smoking cigarettes, then the air gets pretty foul.
And if you get really desperate, you can go to Fort William, which is a lovely little trip on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to a dinner place there. Just ask anyone. The name slips my mind at the moment, but you can get, you know, your standard entertainment after dinner. That's what we finally ended up doing. It's not quite as wonderful as it would be if you would walk in on something happening naturally, but Fort William is a lovely place.
Well, that's Max, isn't it?
Yes, it is, right.
Yep.
Okay,
it is
thanks
in fact
so much.
It's a program put on specifically for visitors, but by the same token, it does give you access to music of sorts. I don't know why that is, but it is very difficult to track down.
You know,
that's an underground movement.
We're at the point that we're going to have to stop. It's just because we've used up our time.
Well, we can go off air, but we don't have to stop, David. You know, we can just chat here for the rest of the afternoon.
I think I probably have something else to do, as much as I would like to hang out with y'all for a while longer. For folks who would like to hear more of and from Jean Redpath, she'll be here to perform on the same stage as the chorale. They are having a concert on Sunday, May 2nd, 7 in the evening, Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. It's their Young Artist Scholarship Concert. So you can hear the chorale, some young performers that they've kind of identified and are trying to encourage, and Jean will be singing as well. And if you don't get there, at least you know you can go down to wherever you buy your CDs and you can find some music by Jean Redpath.
Well, there'll be CDs